Steve Stone, breaking down Chicago baseball with Mully and Henley, the Scores baseball expert.
Let's go!
Steve Stone.
Mully and Henley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. Let's get out to the Potbelly Score Hotline. Potbelly, the place for good vibes and great sandwiches. And there we find the man himself, the Scores baseball expert, Mr. Steve Stone. And you can follow him as we do, stevestone.com. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Pretty good. Anything happened this week? I don't know. I was gone. And
happy 500, Steve.
Well, that's exactly
I can say that three times a baseball season.
There is a baseball saying that you're going to win 60 and you're going to lose 60, and what you do in the other 42 makes your season one way or the other.
Well, we got 42 left.
They've won their 60, they've lost their 60, and now they do have the 42 left, and we'll see just exactly how it works out. But the thing that I like is not necessarily that they've played the best baseball or they've done the best fundamentally, but the defense has gotten incrementally better, which is good. If I could say that, it'd even be better. But it has gotten better. And also, the bullpen has really started to shine. Now, you take that into consideration along with a division which isn't particularly good, and the one thing that the Sox do have that sometimes you run out of the ability to do is hold the future of your own season in your hands. And the Sox still have the future of their season in their own hands, and they're at the point now where if they don't win the division, it's just that they haven't deserved it because it is sitting there for them to go get it. Just a question of putting together some very good baseball against some of the teams that we have left and certainly the two teams we have in front of us, Cleveland and Detroit.
I was looking at it the other day, I want to say Saturday, Steve, and the White Sox at that point had the second best road record in the American League, second most wins, let's put it that way, and I think like the fourth in baseball. Now right. I haven't, I don't know who's been on the road or not, but though that's pretty indicative of how good they've been on the road, and yet at home they have struggled. Now they just won a series, and that's great to see.
Beat the Royals, woo!
But why the discrepancy? What is it? And you know, some of these averages that you're looking at, like Carlos Quentin really stands out. Is it possible that a guy is pushing too hard at home, trying too hard? I mean, why would there be this discrepancy between the performance at home versus the road?
I don't think you can find an answer to that. I mean, you can look at it and you can say, well, this is the reason why, that's the reason why. But I think if anybody could put their finger on it, then it wouldn't be that way. It's much easier to win at home in baseball. If you take a look at all of the records of all 30 teams, you'll realize that most of the teams have winning records at home and losing records on the road. That's just the way things go. But this is an anomaly. This is one of those things in baseball that you look at, and you can't explain it. Nobody can explain it, because if you could explain it, if you could put your finger on it, it wouldn't be that way, because Ozzy and his staff would have gone about trying to fix it. And so far, it's just a question that Carlos, along with a number of other guys, hit better on the road. I don't know what it is. The splits for Quentin are dramatic. Other guys have a little bit less dramatic splits home and away. But, again, you can take out what's happened to this point. 120 games are by the boards, and you're a 500 team. So you can either sit back and say, yay, we're mediocre, or you can say, you know, we came from a long way back, and despite the fact that we haven't played great baseball, we've played average baseball. That's what 60 and 60 is. We still have a chance to win this thing. And I think the ball club feels that way right now. I think they're getting contributions from areas that they never thought they would. Brent Lillibridge is a great example. I didn't know who thought he could play first base, but he's done a better than adequate job over there. Plus, he seems to be hitting everybody's fastball in sight. So you have him. Paulie gets hurt. And you figure, well, you know, you're going to really go into a tailspin because he can't play defense. That hasn't worked out that way. Morel has taken over to play every day. You lose your number one catcher for two games, and you win both of those games. Tyler Flowers hits a home run, you know, comes out of basically out of nowhere. And he's been hitting the ball awfully hard since he's gotten a chance to play a little bit more. So this is something that the team is going to have to do. They're either going to win it or lose it as a team, and they're going to have to get some contributions from guys that they really didn't believe were going to contribute all that much when the season started.
He mentioned Lillibridge, Stoney, and obviously the hope is Paulie's back at first base tomorrow.
Yes.
We'll wait and see, but if he's not, and Adam Dunn missed the weekend because of death in his family, no one, you know, likes to hear about somebody's loss, but fact of the matter is, if there comes a time or continues to be a time where Paulie can't play first, don't you have to, be given what the results were this weekend, don't you have to trot Lillibridge out there instead of Adam Dunn?
Well, I think one of the things that Kenny said, and I think it was very telling, and it was a couple of weeks ago, I believe, and Kenny was talking to the press, and what he said was, look, I don't care about the salaries. The salaries are not the problem of Ozzie Guillen. They're not the problem of Jerry Reinsdorf. In a way, they are the problem of Jerry Reinsdorf because he's going to have to pay them. But realistically, when it comes day to day, they're not the problem of Jerry Reinsdorf. And Kenny kind of fell on his sword and saying, hey, these are my bad contracts. These are my contracts that I had players sign, and they're not producing. Ozzie's job is to put the best team on the field that can win that day, and the contracts are irrelevant. So by throwing it back on Ozzie, what he's saying is, you know, don't play a guy because he's making X number of dollars and you think you have to put him out there. You play whoever you need to play to win on that given day. And I think by doing that now, the ball's going to be in Ozzie's court when Adam does come back. If he feels that he's the best guy to win on that given day, then he plays him. And if he doesn't, then he sits him. And we'll just have to see how that plays out after this off day, which I believe everybody kind of needed. And, you know, that big series with Cleveland coming up, and then Texas comes in right on their heels. So it becomes, we get some tough baseball ahead. And, again, you're sitting there looking at it, and you say, okay, Cleveland comes in, Texas comes in, then you get an off day. You go play the Angels. They're awfully tough, especially if Weaver is part of that equation out there. And then you go to Seattle for three, and if you happen to draw King Felix and you get Pineda, those are some pretty good pitchers that the Mariners can run at you, although they're not a particularly good club. And so, you're sitting there with Minnesota then coming back. It's a three-game homestand, and lo and behold, you're on the road once again for three at Detroit and four at Minnesota, including a split doubleheader. So, there's a lot of interdivision play left, and if they can't beat their division, they will deserve to go home.
You're listening to Mully and Hanley on The Score, and good morning to you. We're talking to Steve Stone. And, Stoney, you're the expert. I'm just a Sox fan. I don't really want to see Dunn anymore, and I don't know how to express that to anybody, but I wouldn't understand why he played. But why would he continue to play? With the hope that maybe this is going to be the time where he comes to life. I just think that the die's been cast. If you want, I know he's under contract. You got to deal with him next year. Fine. I just don't. I don't know that I can look at it anymore.
Well, I think there comes a time, and one of the other things you always hear about baseball is this is not a sprint; it's a marathon. Well, after 120 games, it's not a marathon any longer. You've run most of the marathon, and now you're down to 42, and now it's a sprint. And when you get into that area, you're sprinting for about 6 weeks, about 42 games. You really have to go out there and put the guys that you think are best to win a ball game on that day. Most managers will do that. Let's see what Ozzie does.
Yeah, and the guys in the clubhouse know, and you'd like to really know what they feel about the situation. They're not going to tell you. They're good teammates.
No.
But they don't want to see the guy either if he's just been the albatross this season, or if not he's been certainly in the team picture. Our visit with Steve Stone brought to you by Scapel Auto Group in Merrillville, Indiana.
We got to get to some of this Zambrano stuff. I mean, again, Steve, I don't think anybody was surprised by this. I don't think this snuck up on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, how do you handle it now? What do you do? Do you really just take the money, go? I mean, his representative presumably will be working very hard to make sure the union will be following him. I'm very curious as to what one should do or what the Cubs can do here, barring just paying him off. I guess they have to pay him off.
Yeah, I mean, what they will do, what they can do, what they should do usually are three different things. So let's take a look at what probably is in the works right now, and that is that Barry Praver, who's his agent, said he's going to file a grievance today. When you look at all the things Zambrano has done and all the things that other people have done to get on this disqualified list, you realize that this wasn't all that egregious. A guy having a terrible day, packing up his stuff, saying I'm retiring, and then deciding to have his stuff shift back and said, oh, by the way, I just took a very close look at the contract.
I saw how much money was still on the table.
$24 million that you owe me, I'm not sure I'm quite retiring. So, okay, so we're left with a guy who ostensibly, at least for one night or whatever the case may be, left the ball club, and then you do whatever action that you do. Now it becomes a baseball legal situation. Just how long can you not pay a guy and put him on the disqualified list? That's number one. Number two, just exactly what can you do with him? Well, they have shown conclusively that there's not a whole lot of teams that will trade for him because of a number of different reasons. One is diminishing stuff. If you take into consideration what happened from 2002, where he got 16 starts, 32 appearances, take the 10 years and add everything up, he's averaged 12.5 wins per year. If you throw out 2002, because he only started 16 times, even though he appeared in 32 games, he's averaged 13.3 wins. So he has not lived up to what they decided to pay him, the $18 million, $19 million range. That's one of the big factors, is they paid a guy to be an ace. His best year was 18-13. That's the closest he ever got to winning 20 games. And this is a guy that was paid supremely, like some of the elite pitchers in the game, and he hasn't been one of those guys. That's one factor. So what should happen is probably this. You should sit down with Barry Praver and say, look, here's what we believe. We believe we do not want Carlos Zambrano back on this team for a number of different reasons. And so there is a number between $0 and $24 million that he will accept to be able to take his money and then go someplace else and ply his trade. Or you can play hardball with him and say, yeah, we'll reinstate him. And next year he's going to be simply the highest paid middle reliever in all of baseball. And by the way, he probably won't get near many decisions. So tell him to enjoy the season and enjoy Chicago. It's a beautiful city.
Yeah, but if you do that, Steve, you know, how many more blow-ups are you going to have in the clubhouse? What kind of cancer is it going to be?
Look, my preference would be the former.
Right.
And, you know, I remember at the time they signed him, and you know, obviously I do a lot of radio, I do a lot of television, and so my opinions on these things are fairly well documented. I said I would trade him rather than extend him at the time. And I was, you know, viewed as a lunatic, as I have been viewed many times before, because, you know, Zambrano at the time was the horse. He was the guy you were going to build around. But you don't build around that kind of player. You got to be very careful who you bring into Wrigley Field, because we've got we've got a wonderful city here, but we have 4 and 5 o'clock liquor licenses. We also have, on the north side, we have as many, and I don't know how many they're doing these days, but there's been as many as 53 day games a year, you know, since they got the lights over there. And, you know, I take a look at some of the people that have run through here. You always remember the untouchables of Felix Pea and Corey Patterson and how touchable they became later on. But, you know, when you bring in Aaron Miles and Milton Bradley and Kevin Gregg and Todd Walker and Omar Garcia-Para and Jeremy Burnett.
You're making me irpy.
And Jock Jones and Matt Merton and Cesar Asturias and Mark Bellhorn.
Oh, for love of
and Soriano and Fukudoma. You bring in all of these guys. The one big problem has always been that you're not doing enough research into what these guys do as contributors to a baseball team. Do they make it better? Are they winning players? How about their nightlife? What happens there? Exactly what are these players all about? I mean, you know everything about them before they come to your organization. Can they help you win? And there's certain managers around, and, you know, there's okay, so you might not want to go to the old school. But the old school, some of it was pretty good. Bobby Cox, Mike Socha, Ron Gardner, Tony La Russa, that's kind of old school guys. One under the radar, Bruce Bochy. These guys wouldn't even come close to accepting what Cub management has accepted from players over and over and over again. Some of the new guard, Joe Girardi, Manny Acta, Kurt Gibson, who's done a great job with the Diamondbacks. These guys have a set of rules. They lay them down. The players adhere to the rules, and that's pretty much it. You don't stand at home plate and pose on a ball that doesn't go out of the ballpark. I mean, you do that, and then you don't play. But there didn't seem to be any ramifications for actions on the part of, you know, a whole lot of these players. And so they come over with a permissive attitude that permeates everything that is baseball. You know, if you hadn't seen the Sammy Sosa movie, then you would be a little surprised that the sense of entitlement that Carlos Zambrano grew into as a member of the Cubs. But having seen the Sosa movie and understood how it ends and not liking really how it ends, then you go about making the same situation with Carlos. And that's the sad part about it. So this whole idea that you have to change a culture, I've been talking about this only for about the last 5 years now, but you do have to change the culture. And that comes with the players you bring in and hopefully the players you develop. Because it should be a privilege to play for the Chicago Cubs in this great city of Chicago. And I don't believe they teach how much of a privilege it is to get to the major leagues. I remember with Atlanta, was always told among the young players, when they did something wrong in the minor leagues, they used to say, you can't do that and play for Bobby. And that was just what it was. You can't get up to Atlanta and play for Bobby if you do that. Same thing in Minnesota. You can't do that with Gardy. Gardner's never going to let you play doing that.
All right, Steve, let's take a quick time out. He's Steve Stone, the Scores baseball expert, making some great points there. And what's your reaction? 312-644-6767. We've had our turn to talk to Steve. You can ask your questions next. Mully and Hanley on the Score. Mully and Hanley, let's get back to the man himself. He is the Scores baseball expert, Steve Stone. And Stoney, your public seeks you. Shall we get right to it?
Let's go get him.
We'll start with Paul in Naperville. Paul, you are on with Steve Stone.
Hello, Paul.
Good morning, guys. Morning, Steve. You know, it seems like Minnesota has won the division quite a few times over the last 5-6 years.
Five out of the last eight, yes.
And they seem to get in the playoffs and not do very well at all. And
right.
The question I have is, does it seem like the White Sox are a team that obviously they still have a lot of work to do to get into the playoffs, but does it seem like they're a team that's sort of built to win when they get there? I mean, with their starting pitching, relief pitching, and defense, I mean, is this a team that could be pretty scary if they get in?
Well, I do believe that any team in a short series can beat any team. I mean, you look at St. Louis Cardinals, won 83 games, got into the playoffs, and won the World Championship. Minnesota, one year, I think, won 85 games and won the World Series also. So when you go head-on-head in the first series, which is the most dangerous, a 3 of 5, you can beat anybody. So, yeah, just getting in is really the key. And with Minnesota, one of the big factors is they never really had that big number one, that big guy that you looked at number one. You said, okay, well, this is your shutdown guy, and he can beat their number one, and that's one of the reasons why. Also, Minnesota seemingly folds the tent when they see that Yankee pinstripe uniform, and that's one of the reasons why they usually can't get out of that first round.
Tom has Sox question. He's on with Stoney. Hey, Tom.
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Steve. In my observation, the team perks up when Adam Dunn isn't even around. You probably can't do this, but couldn't it be thought of as saying, Adam, look, we're going to pay you, but go home, check your game out, see what you can do, and come on back in the spring and we'll see what we can do. I think that would put all the pressure off the team, and I think they play better when he's not around.
Yeah, I don't believe that. I think they're playing better now because they're just getting some key hits. They're playing some very good defense. The pitching's been pretty consistent, and the bullpen has almost been locked down. So, you know, you just don't ask Adam Dunn to go home. Maybe you don't play him quite as much. In fact, I'm pretty sure that you won't see him play all that much. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But he's part of the team. He was brought here to be part of the team. I know it's been a horrible year. It's not very frustrating for him and everybody else. But if you choose to play him, that's one thing. But you don't send an uninjured player home.
Just have Z clean out his cubicle.
You can do that, yes.
Let's try Paul. He's on the road. Paul, you're on with Steve Stone.
Hello, Paul.
Morning, guys. Steve, you know, now that it looks like hopefully Zambrano will be gone with this latest blow-up, set it up.
Maybe.
What do you think moving forward would be the best situation for the Cubs since, again, this young pitching doesn't look like it's materializing the way that they thought? And I know in your opinion that a lot of these starters that they think are going to be starters are more bullpen guys. Do they go out and get free agent pitching, or do they go back to the drawing board and try to again, develop guys from within? I mean, to me, I think you would want to get some free agents. I know there's not a ton out there on the market now, but within the next couple of years.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, first of all, you have to make a decision as to just exactly what the game plan is going to be, and it starts with, number one, figuring out how many dollars you're going to allocate. That's number one. Number two, I think you have to change completely what you've been doing in the minor leagues and in player development. I think they've done a nice job under Oneri Fleta as far as the Dominican Republic is concerned. I think they've developed, you know, some pretty decent players coming out of there. The Pacific Rim with Steve Wilson has done a pretty good job over there, especially in Korea. But I think as far as developing their own players, when you develop your own players, it costs you a whole lot less. If you have to go out and buy other people's development systems, then it's going to cost you a whole lot more. So for Tom Ricketts, the first question is, how much am I going to spend? The second question is, take me around the ball club and give me the legitimate prospects, not just what we talk about in the papers. Because, you know, for years, Atlanta and the Dodgers, when the Dodgers were actually developing people, would always be raising the next great, and then you can fill in a position, next great first baseman, next great pitcher, next great whatever. And they'd wind up always being traded to other people, and they wouldn't be so great. So it's one thing to tell other organizations and people around, and in certain instances, your fans when they're reading the paper about how great the prospects are. But realistically, most teams have a tendency to overrate their own prospects, and I don't see a Freddie Freeman coming up through the Cubs system anytime soon, and that's one of the big that's one of the big factors. So make the decision how much money you're going to spend, figure out who you're going to spend it on, who you're going to go after, try to go get them, and you're right, they're going to need some pitching, and that's going to be very important. And they still believe Andrew Cashner can be a starter. I don't necessarily believe that. I think Carpenter's got a great arm. I think they've got, you know, a pretty good back end of the bullpen. That's if you choose not to trade Marmol, who I believe they should trade because he can be an organization builder for you. But again, they're looking for respectability this year for whatever reason, and they've kept him around, and he saves games for you. He's
Steve,
one of those guys.
Hold on 1 second. We're getting a quick scoreboard update from Mark Rohde. Mullion Hanley, thank you, Mark. Let's get back to Steve Stone. Steve, the phone calls await.
Sure.
Let's get to Joe in Riverside. Joe, you're on with Steve Stone.
Hello, Joe.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I just had a comment. It's nice to know that when Dunn is out of the lineup, the opposition, we're not spotting an extra inning to. When you keep going 0-3, 0-4, we're just basically spotting the opposition in the extra inning. Am I correct?
I know. Well, it's been very frustrating, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a train wreck for everyone. Jason is on with Steve Stone. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Jason.
Yeah, how you doing? I noticed a couple of games where when Beckham and Ramirez needed a day off, they would insert Omar Vizquel. But I noticed that obviously his lack of range has kind of hurt the White Sox. Who else can they bring in, and would they bring him up in September for this pennant rush?
I'm not sure exactly who they're going to go and bring up from the minor leagues as far as the middle infield is concerned. You know, Omar has done a decent enough job. Does he have the great range? No, but you're judging him against two guys with exceptional range. Ramirez has unbelievable range, and so does Beckham. Beckham has played a terrific second base. So, obviously, when you take a 44-year-old guy and you look at diminishing range, there's a lot of guys whose range look diminished compared to the two guys you're comparing him to. So I think Omar has done certainly a solid enough job, and he's a guy that you don't mind having up there when you have to have a situational offensive, an offensive at-bat where a guy, you know, you might need a bunt, you might need a sacrifice fly, you might need a ground ball in the infield. Omar seemingly can get you that. So I think for the time being in a pennant race, I think they'll probably stick with Omar.
Yeah, Stoney, I'll never understand why you have to have a good batting average to win a gold glove, because Beckham certainly's got the glove. Southside Rick's online. He's got a question for you. Hey, Rick.
Hello, Rick.
Yeah, hi, Steve. Always enjoyed you pitching, guy.
Well, thanks. You're the guy.
Yeah, listen, attitude and ability has been forgotten as long as you can pop the ball. That's what Major League's problem is, and the prime example
That's what it was. It's coming. Well, it's coming back a little bit now, but go ahead.
Yeah, but our shortstop is a prime example of that. Okay, he can pop the ball, but I've never seen a shortstop that can't handle the bag, doesn't know how to cover on a steal,
yes,
doesn't know how to pivot on a double play,
yes,
doesn't have any of the instincts of a shortstop. He
yes
might have the range, but he doesn't know what to do with the ball after he gets it half the time. That's my problem with him.
Well, there's a lot of guys who play in this game, and they have low baseball acumen. There's a lot of guys who have been very successful. Lance Johnson did not have great baseball acumen, yet he kept getting 200 hits a year. Delino DeShields was a magnificent athlete in years past. In fact, probably could have played in the NBA, but he had no baseball acumen. He just didn't have a feel for the game, but his skills were good enough where he played, and he played very well for a long time. So you would love to have the full package. You'd love to have a guy with everything. Five-tool player who also was a very smart player on the field. That doesn't come around too often. So the downside of Alexi is not near enough to make up for what he gives you on the upside, which is a tremendous amount of range, a good arm, a silver slugger shortstop as a hitter. So, you know, you look at it and you say, hey, would you please quit taking the throw in front of the bag? My Lord, you've got to go 8 feet to make a tag.
But, Stoney, when he was playing second base, we heard, you know, wait till you see him at shortstop. And he was a pretty damn good second baseman from what I remember.
Yes, but he also, you know, he's a shortstop of this team because of the range that he can give you. And he was. He did play a really good second base, except that he is a shortstop. So, I mean, again, you want the perfect player. He's not the perfect player, but he's pretty good.
Steve, we had a caller earlier that didn't make it on the air, but
yes,
the guy made a point I thought was very interesting. He said that the thing with Zambrano happened because he had given up the five home runs and no one came to get him, that he wanted out of the game essentially because
Carlos Zambrano doesn't need innings for
exactly
anybody.
Exactly. And they said on the broadcast that that five home runs was a record that was held by, among others, you.
Me,
and,
sure.
And
did you quit that night?
But I'm assuming, Steve,
yes,
that you were trying to protect the bullpen and stayed in that game and eight innings like a starter's supposed to do when a game gets a little out of control.
Well,
did his ego get involved in that?
Well, I would have loved to stay in a whole lot longer, but Jim Marshall felt that the third inning was enough.
Oh.
I had given up five solo home runs, and he came out, and I said, hey, the record's six. I got a long way to go to get to that. I mean, I can do that easily. But, no, I stayed around. I talked to the press afterward because that's what you do. Look, the idea of taking one for the club or doing anything for the club, that idea is completely lost on Carlos Zambrano. But to not know that, don't forget, he was given that five-year contract 2 months after his fight with Michael Barrett.
Yeah.
And that fight that not only went on in full view of everybody in the dugout, but that fight that continued to go on into the locker room.
He would have been arrested had it not happened in the clubhouse. If it was out in the street, it would have been felony charges.
Yeah, and very, very possible. But, again, we go to a permissive attitude, and there's managers and there's general managers who don't take that stuff. That, look, and I was told by none other than Bobby Cox when I asked him, Lou Piniella made a comment. He said, you can't manage to get guys today like you could in 1990 when Lou went wire to wire with the Cincinnati Reds. And I went to an Arizona Fall League game. I saw Bobby Cox. They were looking at the guy they thought then would be their everyday center fielder, Jordan Schaefer. And I mentioned Lou's remarks to him. And Bobby, in his very gruff way, very direct, used an expletive, and he said, you know, that's a bunch of bleep. And I said, why do you say that? He goes, because you can manage guys any way you want to manage them. You set down a set of rules. You make them very simple. And when players don't adhere to those rules, you can't charge them enough money. They make too much money now for you to find them anything and make it consequential. But the one thing you have as a manager is you have the pencil. So you can sit them down on the bench for three games, and they understand that. They understand that because their numbers won't look near as good if they take three games off. Or you have them then explain to the team why it is that they're sitting down if they haven't hustled. And Bobby felt that you could always do that. You always did it that way. And it's not just Bobby. There are guys, and I bring it up. I mean, Kirk Gibson installed a brand-new culture with the Arizona Diamondbacks. It was one of complacency. It was one, a team that wasn't hungry. It was one that went out there and on a daily basis wasn't near as serious as Kirk Gibson wanted them to be. So he took over. I'm not going to tell you he's the greatest manager in the world, but I'm going to tell you he's a real tough guy. And he has a set of rules that everybody adheres to. And that's just the way it is. If you don't get with the program, then you get out of the lineup. And I believe, you know, without antagonizing anybody, I believe that's what you have to do. And I also believe everybody talks about change of culture, but they've been talking about change of culture on the north side for a long time. I believe this is the first time that they really have to do that. If they are intent on actually winning this thing sometime in the foreseeable future, I believe the entire culture has to change. And the next guy that doesn't run, that poses at home plate on a ball that doesn't leave the ballpark, you just don't play him for 3 days. The next guy that doesn't run and a ball gets by him, maybe in the outfield, and he trots after it, you don't play him for 3 days. It's as simple as that. You start with little small things, and then you go after it, and you bring in people who fit the overall team concept that you've laid down. And it has to be brand new because, conclusively, they have proven that the other way just doesn't work. And so you change. You have to change. But to do that, you can't have the same people all
Amen.
Of a sudden turn the screws up. You got to change. So.
All right, Steve. Thanks a ton. We appreciate it as always, buddy.
Enjoy your off day.
Okay, boys. Take care, and I'll talk to you next week. And by that point, it should start to get really interesting.
Here's hoping. Steve Stone. You can follow him as we do, stevestone.com. It's Molly and Hanley on The Score.